draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Ali versus Akim. Mr. Roth.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Charles Roth for the petitioner, Ahmed Ali. Mr. Ali is a refugee from Somalia who committed a crime after he arrived here, although it was not an aggravated felony. We make three basic arguments. First, that the board misanalyzed the Convention Against Torture, the CAT statute. Second, that they misinterpreted the term particularly serious crime. And third, that the agency overstepped its authority in setting the standards for adjudicating
refugee
waivers.
Is the detention issue, the Kim issue, is that moot, as the government says?
We hope so, not because of what the government says, but because he was subsequently released by the government, and so the possibility that he would be re-detained seems speculative, unless the government stands up and says they're certainly going to do that if the case is remanded. If it's remanded, he would be back under 236 rather than 241, and so they would have authority to re-detain him if they wanted to. But it seems speculative at this point, so we hope that it's moot.
Now, wait, you're saying, well, we'll hear from the government whether if we remanded, they would take him back into custody. That's what you're concerned about?
We hope and think that it's moot.
Well, we'll ask.
Regarding the Convention Against Torture claim, at a minimum, you should remand this. The regulations require the agency to consider any evidence of past torture of the respondent. Now, the board here acknowledges that members of the USC militia comprised of another clan, the Huiye clan, killed a couple of his brothers. They make no mention of what they did to his sister. Now, Ali and his family were forced to sit there helplessly while these militia guys come in there and try to rape her. When she resists, they kill her. Now, whatever motivations might cause militia men to want to rape people during a civil conflict, when you make the men folk watch the women folk get raped, there's a purpose there. The purpose is to cause humiliation and suffering, not only to the women, but to the men. And that was our argument below. If it isn't commonsensical, the documentation in the record shows that as well. The USC militia used rape, not only in this case, but as a pattern in practice. They used rape to inflict pain and suffering on these opposition clans, as a form of ethnic cleansing. I'd refer the court to 1025 of the administrative record. So Ali, who's still a boy, is forced to watch this. He ends up suffering post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of this, and the regulations and the administrative authorities show that this PTSD is evidence of that the intentional mental suffering inflicted on him rose to the level of torture. Even if the ultimate weighing of that question were close, the board didn't even mention what happened to his sister. It just didn't mention it at all. It talks about his brothers and not about the sister. That makes no sense, and that alone would require remand. Now, we have other complaints about the board's CAT analysis. We think that in another leap of illogic, yes, of course, he will be robbed. That was our expert who got on the stand and said, yes, he's going to be robbed. But that's not mutually exclusive of being tortured and killed. And probably in that order, as Dr. Samatar explained. There's no need to show a nexus for CAT. What there is a need to show is that they would intentionally inflict severe pain on him in order to punish him for his class membership or out of clan hatred or discrimination. The same disdain and hatred and lack of regard for human life and other clan members is what would motivate both the robbery and the torture and the killing. The board ignored the overwhelming evidence of the record. So we believe this should be remanded for a grant. Turning to the particularly serious crime issue, that term is used in both the withholding and the asylum statute, but the statutes define it differently. For withholding, the statute says someone committed a that when someone has committed an aggravated felony or felonies for which the term of imprisonment is at least 5 years, that is a per se particularly serious crime. The next sentence says, notwithstanding the length of sentence, the agency may consider another crime to be particularly serious. In our legal world, that has clear meaning. There, if X and Y are both present, it has to be particularly serious. Notwithstanding the absence of Y, it may be. That means that X is clearly required. So the plain meaning of the statute expressio unius est exclusio alteris. The plain meaning of the statute is it has to be an aggravated felony for it to be a particularly serious crime under the withholding statute. Now we
what
make
about the argument that the government is just explaining, interpreting the humanitarian family and public interest basis for withholding.
The humanitarian interest.
Is that withholding or deferral?
That's the that's the refugee waiver 209C. So that's the matter of gene issue. That's the third argument that we would make. The withholding is mandatory. It's not discretionary at all. The Attorney General shall withhold removal to a country.
Is that the one to which the humanitarian family public interest? No.
No, that's the refugee waiver under 209C. Withholding is mandatory, and if the reason that the agency gave for denying withholding was they found that he had committed a particularly serious crime, we argue that it wasn't an aggravated felony. It couldn't have been.
I understand that argument, but what about where does the humanitarian come in?
As to the matter of Gene and the refugee waiver, we can
well,
only...
Is refugee waiver, is that deferral or is that something else?
That's something else.
Something...
Yes. It's when you have someone who comes in as a refugee, after a year they have to either adjust status to become a permanent resident or get put into removal proceedings. So the 209C waiver comes in at that point. He can waive a ground of inadmissibility to permit him to stay here, or they can deny it and kick him out. And when they're adjudicated...
That's different from asylum?
Yes. Yes, it's different from asylum.
Is it purely discretionary with the government?
Asylum is discretionary, as is the refugee waiver. The refugee waiver, the grant of a 209C waiver...
Are there criteria for asylum? Are there for refugee waiver?
Well, Congress has specified for humanitarian purposes to assure family unity or where it's otherwise
so
in the public.
So that's the criterion for refugee waiver?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so can't the... BIA interpret that to exclude a particularly serious crime defined perhaps separately from the aggravated felony definition?
The considerations are similar, though the standards will be slightly different. The particularly serious crime is a term of art that refers to asylum and withholding. And it's the board's never said that that determination is relevant to the 209C waiver. The 209C waiver, the board has imposed, the Attorney General imposed a separate standard for deciding whether to grant that in the exercise of discretion. And it's our argument in that case.
What's that standard?
The standard of matter of genes says that where an individual has committed a violent or dangerous act, that the discretion will only be exercised for that individual where there's, he lists a couple of things, national security implications, contributions to our country or extraordinary and extremely unusual hardship. The Attorney General.
So what's your quarrel with that effort by him to particularize the 209C standard? What's wrong with that?
We have no objection to the general proposition that as the seriousness of a crime increases, the amount of equities on the other side would have to increase as well. We have, first of all, it's completely divorced from the statute. The statute. Both the statutory text and the reason for the statute, which is namely the person's persecution here. We think that at a minimum the considerations in adjudicating a refugee waiver should include the possibility of persecution, what kind of persecution it's going to be, what kind of past persecution the person suffered, and post-traumatic stress disorder. We bring in 70,000 refugees a year, and basically everyone has had something happen to them. Either they've been physically tortured or they've been living in fear for years, and a whole bunch of them are kids who have watched their parents or uncles or brothers killed. These are people who are broken, and it's foreseeable that when they come here, they're going to have problems, and the 209C waiver is specifically for that situation. They're going to come here and they're going to get into some kind of trouble
but
with the law.
Why would a person be denied asylum yet granted refugee waiver?
Well, of course, we think he should be granted
No,
both.
I understand, but these are all, you're making alternative arguments. So what would be a case where someone wasn't entitled to asylum but was entitled to a refugee waiver?
In matter of Jean, the applicant was a derivative asylee. Her husband had been persecuted. She hadn't. So she was allowed to adjust status under 209C. She didn't have, at least so held the Attorney General, a separate asylum claim. Mr. Ali, of course,
But wouldn't
does.
She have the marital adjustment? Why would she need the refugee waiver?
Her husband would have been an asylee and then a permanent resident, and there's a waiting period for people who are married to permanent residents. It's not quick like for spouses of citizens. So she was facing getting removed to Haiti. So there are circumstances. It's separate adjudication. Mm-hmm. I suppose... where a crime is particularly serious. For example, if there were an aggravated felony, you're not per se barred from a 209C waiver. You would be per se barred from asylum.
If there's a what?
If it were an aggravated felony. The other objection...
This whole characterization of these offenses doesn't seem to make a lot of sense either. An aggravated felony could be something like... defrauding a federally insured bank of $10,000 or more. That's an aggravated felony. And here, this is not an aggravated felony, yet it seems to me a lot more serious for public safety. And I mean, your client committed a substantial battery in violation of Wisconsin law, five-year, nine-year felony, and attack somebody with a carpenter's knife and cut him up and got 22 stitches. And that seems to me a lot more serious than the bank fraud, which clearly is an aggravated felony.
Congress uses the state court imposition of sentence as a sort of surrogate for how serious the crime was, because they didn't want to get into the facts of every case. And here you have a state court judge who looked at the mitigating circumstances, the fact that these guys who he got in a fight with again had previously come and beat him up, these guys walking around with insomnia and all these nightmares, flashbacks and whatnot, and he wasn't acting, it wasn't an exercise of good judgment, there's no doubt. But the board looked at this and his sense that he was back in this lawless place where the police couldn't protect him. He's gone to the police, they've done nothing, and he definitely overreacted. But the state court only imposed an 11-month sentence because it looked at the facts and decided that that was appropriate. And Congress uses that to help it determine whether a crime is aggravated. So certainly the mitigating factors were relevant to the state court judge's determination. That's the only answer I can give you. No, I don't know if the statute is rational if you look at it in the overall scheme of things, but...
What if, hypothetically, if the state court sentence would have been greater, like 3 years or something?
Then he would have been an aggravated felon. He would have been barred from asylum and quite possibly barred from withholding.
And that would have kicked in after, like, 13 months, right?
Right.
Once, so you got 11-month sentence, so that's you rely on that the judge made a determination that the offense... maybe on a hierarchy of seriousness wasn't that serious. But if he had decided 13 months, then your argument wouldn't work.
Yeah, and that, of course, would also have meant he would have been going to the state penitentiary rather than the county jail. He would have been ineligible for this work release program and the torture treatment that he received while he was in the county jail. I mean, there were other reasons for sentencing him to less than a year.
Do you know if the state court sentencing judge heard and considered an immigration-related argument in coming in at 11 months?
So far as we know, no. If it pleases the court, I'm going to reserve some time for...
Hey, thank you, Mr. Roth. Ms. McKay?
May it please the court, Your Honors, Leslie McKay for the respondent, Alberto Gonzalez. With the court's permission, I'd like to first discuss the 209C matter of Jean.
Now, what about the mootness issue?
Oh, I apologize, Your Honor. Yes, the detention issue, the government's position is that it's moot. Mr. Ali has been released from custody. I believe he was released on December 20th of last year. All the relief that he's asking for in his detention challenge currently before this court has been granted by DHS. The question of his future detention, possibly under 236A of the Act, is completely speculative. And so it's the government...
Well, if we remanded it, how would that affect his detention status?
Well, Your Honor, it wouldn't immediately affect his detention status because he's currently out of detention. He's not subject to mandatory detention under 236C of the Act. He could possibly be subject to detention under 236A of the Act, which is pre-order detention. However, again, it's a speculative concern at this point. I can't give you any assurances that the government will not take him back into custody. But I can certainly tell you that at this point he's out of custody pursuant to a review under 241.4 of the regulations. And
well, what's the criterion for 236A?
236A merely says that, you know, the Attorney General may take someone into custody. I think the considerations are dangerousness and flight risk. And certainly those factors would have been considered in determining whether to release him at this point under 241.4.
Fine, thanks.
Okay. Turning to the 209C matter of Gene issue.
So is there any asylum question here, or is it just the Convention Against Torture and the refugee waiver? Those are the only two?
The asylum question is a statutory one. It's they're raising a statutory challenge to whether the Attorney General has the authority to determine on a case-by-case basis that an alien is guilty of a particularly serious crime. Mr. Ali argues that the Attorney General doesn't have this authority, and the government's response is that under the plain text of the statute, the Attorney General absolutely does have that authority. 208B2A2 of the Act says that aliens convicted of particularly serious crimes shall be ineligible for asylum. Later in that statute, 208B2B and 208B2C, the statute sets forth special rules and an additional limitation which allow the Attorney General to, by regulation, designate offenses that will be considered to be particularly serious crimes, and by regulation to establish additional limitations and conditions under which an alien shall be ineligible for asylum. And Mr. Ali argues that this language means that the Attorney General can only designate by regulation and cannot use matter of frontescue and determine on a case-by-case basis. And that's simply not the case. The language of the statute is permissive. It says that the Attorney General may designate by regulation. It certainly does not say that the Attorney General must designate by regulation. And the fact that Congress gave permission to promulgate these types of regulations to establish per se categories of particularly serious crimes certainly doesn't prohibit the Attorney General from making a case-by-case individual determination based on the facts of a conviction and the nature of that conviction. And so that's, in the asylum context, that's your consideration. It's whether indeed he was statutorily eligible to be considered for asylum. And in the context of withholding of removal, just to turn quickly to that, the same arguments really apply, except that under withholding, 241B3B of the Act, the language is even broader. The Attorney General, again, absolutely has authority to make a case-by-case determination and apply matter of frontescue, and it reaffirmed that case-by-case analysis in matter of LS, which I believe was issued in 1999, which explains that...
Well, I'm a little puzzled. So it is part of the statute that if the alien has been convicted of a felony, but he hasn't been sentenced to 5 years in prison, still the Attorney General can deem him guilty of a particularly serious crime.
That is correct.
So that isn't applicable here, is it?
Applicable here in what way,
in
Your Honor?
This case. I mean, it's not applicable.
Because
this
he's not...
This was not a felony, so this couldn't be used by the Attorney General in this case, right? You couldn't use this.
We're only using it to respond to the argument that the Attorney General's authority is not limited to determine that Mr. Ali's crime, substantial battery with a dangerous weapon.
So you're saying Congress This provision still allows him to, or doesn't prevent him from just making an ad hoc determination of what's a particularly serious crime?
Of making a case-by-case determination, that's correct, Your Honor.
It's my understanding this is a felony.
It's not an aggravated felony.
It's a felony, though.
It is a felony, but not an aggravated felony under the Immigration Act. And that's the consideration in the withholding statute and the asylum statute is whether something is an aggravated felony. Correct. And in the withholding context, just to conclude, the board's interpretation in matter of LS is confirmed by the legislative history in this case, which contemplates that the Attorney General would have authority to consider other circumstances in which an alien has been convicted of a particularly serious crime.
Passing that issue, what I find disturbing in this case is the immigration judge's discussion of torture. This notion that these people, the assailants here, are just looters? I don't understand that. It doesn't sound very plausible. There's obviously a lot of, you know, ethnic hatred going on here, isn't there?
Well, Your Honor, the board's consideration of the torture claim was thorough. They did focus on Dr. Samatar's testimony, and he did testify that, in fact, if Ali returns to Somalia, his harm will likely be the result of being a civilian caught between warring factions and roving bandits or armed gangs who may want to rob him because they perceive him.
But it's not just... Is it just gangs, or is it this fact he belongs to this minority that everybody hates?
I think on this record, it is impossible to make a distinction. The testimony simply does not compel that conclusion. There's certainly, the record reflects that Somalia is in a horrible situation right now, that it is war-torn, that it is plagued by civil war and ethnic rivalry. I don't think there's any question about that. I think the question is whether, in a record like that, under the substantial evidence standard, whether that kind of record compels a result contrary to the one reached by the board, and it doesn't. The past harm that was suffered by Ali did not rise to the level of torture that he individually suffered.
Well, if you look at the board's opinion, so I'm looking at A62. So apparently they believed Dr. Samatar, didn't they? Or didn't he said, who found the respondent would be subjected not only to torture by the dominant Hawaya clan, but also by members of his own clan because of his stay in the United States and the perception he might be a person. Well, so they seem to have believed that, right?
I don't think there was any question that they accepted the testimony of Dr. Samatar.
So what is it? And then they say, well, maybe he could relocate somewhere else? I don't understand. What's the basis? It's an anarchy. How is he going to find his way to some safe place? I don't get that.
Well, Your Honor, I think you have to read the board's decision cumulatively, though. The entirety of the decision is focused on the fact that, yes, there's anarchy in Somalia, but that fact alone, that there's so many possible reasons why...
What more facts do you want?
Besides
his testimony and Dr. Samatar's testimony...
Dr. Samatar's testimony is by no means conclusive on the issue of torture.
Nothing's conclusive.
But that's exactly
what
the point.
No. You think an alien to get asylum has to prove conclusively?
I don't think that, Your Honor. I think that when an alien brings forward evidence of this type and puts evidence like this in the record, and the board determines that that evidence is not sufficient
you
to establish CAT.
What more evidence he should have presented?
I think he could have presented evidence specifically of past torture to himself. He could have presented evidence that the past harm to his family members was specifically intended to cause torture to him, which he has not.
Two of his brothers were killed. And there's the murder of his sister, which is not mentioned by the board.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The rape of his sister actually is mentioned by the board in the March 17th decision.
She wasn't raped.
The attempted rape on page 54 of the record. And the fact that Ali witnessed this, while horrific, there's no evidence in the record supporting his contention that he was forced.
The torture opinion, Convention Against Torture, that is a relevant opinion, right? I mean, that's what he's complaining about.
I'm sorry?
The question of Convention Against Torture is separate from the asylum claim, right?
Yes.
Okay. And in discussing the Convention Against Torture, the board does not mention the murder of the sister.
The board mentions the past harm to his family at page 54 of the record. The board mentions evidence that members of his family had been slain and raped because of their membership. I'm reading the wrong line. I apologize. That I was reading the wrong line. I think the relevant page is page 55, the next page. And you're right, Your Honor. They don't specifically mention the harm to his sister, but they do mention the harm to his family and the deaths of his two brothers, which I don't think you can say, honestly.
But we know he's a member of a hated minority, right? This Rowan Hain, however you pronounce it. They're very much hated. And this kind of business seems to go beyond looting in a gang-like atmosphere. I don't understand.
But the question is what type of harm is he likely to suffer in the future?
Very bad, right?
Well, harm, but not necessarily harm that rises to the level of torture, because torture, under the regulation...
Does the board ever acknowledge the status of this Rahan Wayne minority?
They discuss the country conditions. I don't believe that they specifically discuss...
Don't they know that the Rahan Wayne are the particular complete losers in Somalia because they're small and everybody hates them? And they're unarmed?
They certainly acknowledge the fact that he's from a minority clan.
It's not just a minority. It's the Ron Wayne. They're a peculiarly helpless and persecuted minority, aren't they?
I don't think that that's particularly borne out by...
Do you know whether they are or not?
I don't think that that's borne out by the country conditions or Dr. Samatar's testimony. No, Your Honor, I do not specifically think that.
You don't know anything about the Ron Wayne. You've never looked it up yourself.
I've read the country conditions. I've read the record in this case. I know that they're a minority clan. I know that they have two militias who are currently engaging in a civil war. I know that members of that clan do face ethnic harm. I think on this record... This Convention Against Torture claim has been considered fully and thoroughly. The record was considered thoroughly by the board. The past harm was considered, the country conditions were considered, and Dr. Samatar's testimony was considered. And the question for this court is, does this record compel a contrary result? And the answer is no. The fact that the record might support a contrary result is not before this court.
The status of the rest of his family...
Your Honor, the rest of his family are here in the United States, as far as I know. They all entered as refugees.
Are they illegal immigrants? Are they illegals?
No, all of the family entered as refugees, as far as I know.
Why are they allowed to stay and he isn't?
Mr. Ali also entered as a refugee under Section 207 of the Act. However, when he committed his crime, he was not allowed to adjust his status under Section 209 of the Act. And he was placed into removal proceedings.
But why was his family allowed in?
They were allowed in as
were they
refugees.
Given asylum?
Yes. It's.
If they were given asylum, wasn't that related to concerns with torture?
There's,
why were they given asylum?
We don't know that, Your Honor. There's no evidence of that in the record.
If they were given asylum because, as members of this Ron Wayne minority, they faced torture, wouldn't that have implications for his CAT case?
Well, Your Honor, essentially, Mr. Ali also entered as a refugee at a point in the past. That past consideration, no, is not relevant to this consideration for torture.
What if his family wouldn't it be very relevant to know why they were granted asylum?
No.
No? What if they were granted asylum because they said, look, the Ron Wayne are tortured there, so if we go back, we're going to be tortured. That's certainly a form of persecution, right?
I think the consideration for asylum and entry as a refugee under 207 is totally separate.
You're not following my question. Suppose they say, we want asylum because we face persecution if we return. And in fact, we would be tortured if we return, and that's a form of persecution. And suppose the immigration judge, the asylum officer, the board said, yes, you're right. You would be tortured if you went back there, and therefore you're entitled to asylum. Now, if that was the ground for asylum for his family, that would certainly be relevant to his CAT claim, wouldn't it?
I disagree, Your Honor.
It wouldn't be relevant?
I don't agree.
It wouldn't be relevant that the board had actually found that members of the Ron Wayne minority, in fact, his specific family, faced torture if they were sent back?
No, because there's no finding by the board or an immigration judge for an entry under Section 207 of the Act. There's no traditional asylum application.
I don't understand you. Suppose they made a finding that his family would be tortured if they were sent back to Somalia. Wouldn't that finding be relevant to whether he faces torture if he's sent back?
No. Again, Your Honor, no. I don't agree.
Not relevant?
I don't agree. Even assuming that the board would have made a finding, which they don't, to enter under 207.
What they found when they
there is no
grant.
Finding by
you
the
don't
board.
You don't know on what basis his family was given asylum, do you?
No, no one does. It's not in the record.
I'm asking you a hypothetical question. Suppose they were given asylum because, say, the asylum officer was convinced that they were victims of torture or faced torture if they returned. Wouldn't that have implications for his situation?
If that were the case, hypothetically
right.
speaking, my answer is still no, because that decision would have been made in approximately, I believe, 1990. The question before this court now in 2006 is, does he face torture when he returns to Somalia now? And the conditions in Somalia
have improved?
Arguably, yes,
arguably,
Your Honor.
Arguably? What does that mean?
It means that the country conditions...
Do you have any... Have they, in fact, improved according to the
State
People
are returning according to the State Department. Thousands and thousands of refugees every year are returning to Somalia.
Rahan Waynes?
I'm sorry?
Rahan Waynes are returning?
That I don't know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McKay. Mr. Roth, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. Under withholding of removal, past persecution would trigger a presumption of future persecution, which the government would then have an opportunity to rebut. There's been no such presentation of evidence. Under the CAT, under the Convention Against Torture, past persecution doesn't trigger a presumption, but there's a mandatory requirement that the agency consider past torture when it analyzes a future chance of persecution. As to the considerations under Francescu, what the board did here was engage in an elements-only examination of the crime. It didn't look at the underlying facts and circumstances that Francescu would require. We were arguing, in the alternative, if you don't buy our plain meaning of the statute argument for a particularly serious crime, that the board at least should have examined all of the facts and circumstances of the case rather than engaging in an elements-only discussion. As to the government's citation of the slain and raped language, which it admits was pertained to a different case, it actually pertained to a case where the board said it isn't as if his family were slain and raped. Well, they completely missed this incident. They just don't discuss it at all, and if nothing else, that requires remand.
Can you just tell me what the law is on somebody who's granted asylum and then, say, within a certain number of years of the grant of asylum commits an aggravated felony or a particularly serious offense? Is there a period of time that transpires, let's say, three, 4 years after you're granted asylum, that your asylum grant is revoked?
An aggravated felony at any point before you become a citizen makes you deportable.
Okay, so it doesn't make any difference how much time expires?
No. And right now, he's sort of been given enough rope to hang himself. He's been released from custody. He's either going to show by his conduct now that he's managed to reform his life, that his mistake of 5 years ago was an isolated incident before he was getting treatment for this post-traumatic stress disorder, or else he's, you know, if he commits another crime, he's certainly going to be denied. So all we're asking for is a second chance. It's not a little thing, but we are asking for a second chance for this individual.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Roth and Ms. McKay. Next case for argument is Laskowski versus